Welcome back. Today we're going to be covering episode 3 of Harley Quinn season 5 and some fun casting rumors as well as some other things. Tyson, you want to give us your initial thoughts on this third episode?
Totally. We got Clayface, finally.
Finally.
That was a ton of fun, and like I mentioned earlier, kind of a strange juxtaposition of like a B story to the Harley Quinn, Ivy, dealing with the Doctor being reincarnated, but it was fun to get that like silly, goofy energy back. I've been missing just the nonsensical Clayface.
Yeah, it was good to see him back, and he's like in Metropolis, which is nice. It's not like it was back in Gotham. So it's kind of fun to see him interact with characters like Lois Lane and Mr. White. Yeah, and it was also fun. Bane came back. And like you said, just very silly hijinks kind of story, which yeah. I'm here for.
I thought it was kind of interesting that they kind of put him kind of at the bottom rung of theater once again. Like, they kind of played it up, at least in season 4 a lot, that, you know, he was in Vegas, he had made it big, everybody loved him for his theater. So it was kind of funny to just see the whole episode being about him and his failing one-man show that everybody just kind of hated, which, like, it was an awful premise, of course. It was bad.
Yeah.
But it was just... maybe funny that they kind of put him just back at the bottom where he's just not great at acting like he was in the original
right.
first seasons.
Yeah, I kind of wonder if we'll get any expansion on that. But yeah, that's a very funny point because he was allegedly well-beloved, right? Yeah, his one-man show's terrible premise, terrible everything. Those reviews were so funny, though, where it's like, he's very talented at making you wish you were never born.
It's a hate crime of an Italian accent. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I loved it. That was a really fun part.
What are your thoughts on kind of the arc of the Doctor?
Yeah, I thought it was pretty solid. It was definitely like a lot shorter than what I would have thought it would be based on the importance of that character to Ivy. But they seem to wrap it up in this episode, which is cool. Like, I'm here for it. It was a fun time. I like that they were able to incorporate the green, which was something I had frankly forgotten about. You kind of jogged my memory on that with the Swamp Thing story from a while back. So it was cool to get that again. I liked that Frank was able to show up. Good to see him. And what do they call him? Florian Man?
Yeah, like Floronic, I feel like. Because it rhymes with Moronic.
Man. Yeah, that's what it was, Floronic Man. Yeah, that was pretty funny.
Just it was a dumb was. Name. I'm glad
totally.
They called it out.
Totally. Yeah, I thought that was pretty good. I think Harley trying to like figure out where he is in the building was great. I think... Harley, you know, finding the room and trying, kind of like a Stranger Things thing where, like, I don't know if Stranger Things is the right way to put it, but just a thing where, like, this
kind
person's
of like the alternate
in,
dimension.
Yeah. I guess, yeah, kind of like Eleven, what she does.
Yeah.
But it was kind of cool to have that dynamic. I really, like I said, I thought that they would be, that he would last a lot longer, but. It kind of looks like they're moving on to Brainiac.
It seemed like a one and done. Like obviously with him like growing back a ton as she tried to kill him, there's maybe some wiggle room there, but it seemed pretty clear that he was down for the count and they moved on to higher stakes.
Yeah. What do you think about the Brainiac stuff?
Exciting. I'm glad we got more of that, right? Because we got the little teaser at the end of episode 1 and nothing in episode 2, which we were kind of disappointed about.
Right.
But I'm glad that we got some more of him. Once again, just kind of an exciting villain. And we saw that he has a little pet monkey, which
that
is
awesome.
Delightful.
I love monkeys.
And kind of like, maybe like a crazy twist. Like it moved very fast that like they're completely unaware of his presence and now they're like held captive on his ship. So I'm actually very curious where they're taking this.
Yeah, I think what Lois Lane was talking about early in the episode has something to do with it, where she was saying, like, there's an unidentified object in Metropolis airspace, and people are having dreams of skulls.
Oh, yeah.
And Brainiac's ship is in the shape of a skull.
No, that would make a ton of sense, because I put that together with the giant ship, but I was confused about the dreaming.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I'm as far as, like, unless he's mind controlling all of them or slowly, I don't really know. I haven't known Brainiac to be able to do that, but who knows? Maybe he can.
But it's clear that, you know, he's kind of had this slow takeover of something. We're not sure what the grand scheme is, but, like, he's kind of embedded himself into Metropolis, like, society.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, like you said, they'd kind of jump right into it. Looks like next episode we'll get some answers as far as Brainiac is concerned. Do you think that it's pure, the only reason he captured them was, like, his perfection meter, or do you think it could be something else, like he knows that they're supervillains and wants their help? Like, what are your thoughts?
I feel like it's leaning towards the perfection meter, and I say that primarily because they were captured immediately after they killed the doctor, finally. They're both physically a mess when they're captured, right? You can see how they're, like, transported in the cell and covered in, like, just plant sap, IVs bleeding.
Yeah.
I feel like that was a very clear representation of, like, they have finally done an action that has displeased him enough to, like, take action.
Right.
He needs them to cease because they're messing with his plans. They weren't supposed to be in Metropolis.
That makes perfect sense. Because, yeah, they kind of mess it up enough that it would require action, right? That's a great point.
What do you think of them still kind of leaning into the relationship dynamic between Harley and Ivy, where it's less about kind of the adventures that they're doing, and they're still kind of working on that, like, they're a couple and they have problems too?
Yeah, I don't know. I think what was so fun about the first couple seasons of Harley Quinn was the whole, like, will they, won't they get together? And then seasons 3 and 4, like you've mentioned, have kind of all been about them figuring out their relationship, which is fun. I enjoy it. Those seasons are really a good time. But the fact that you mentioned that is kind of making me think maybe I kind of just want more silly, goofy hijinks like the Bane and Clayface stuff, or the, yeah, or maybe just something like Kite Man, where it's like you have the relationship stuff intertwined within very goofy things.
Yeah, but it's not like the key. Yeah. It's not like the episode, because that was like, that was the whole sandwich of this episode, was the beginning, and they're, like, talking about how, you know, they don't communicate well enough, and the very end, just before they got captured by Brainiac, was like, oh, I'm sorry, we don't communicate, we should be better.
Right, right.
Which is fine. We talked about that in the first episode, where it's just like, we love that they're kind of moving into this new area, they have this new energy, it might be more fun and less relationship centric. The silly goofy should be the focus.
For sure. I mean, it's technically good writing, right, to have a problem introduced at the beginning of the episode, which is their communication skills, and then develop that, and then by the end it's resolved, you know, kind of like that sitcom writing. Yeah. Where it's like everyone's cool in the end with,
right,
each other,
kind of fit the status quo, and
right, and it's like that stuff works. I think it's when you have the A and B plot, where the B plot is quite a bit more fun to watch, if I'm being honest.
Yeah.
And I just hope they kind of integrate those more together, and it's not like season 4 where it's, you got the Harley and Ivy stuff, and then you have the funny Bane story where he's trying,
right,
to get the pasta maker. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
There, I feel like there's a lot of potential there, and I'm hoping they kind of lean into that. But that was what was, at least for me, initially exciting about the Harley Quinn show, was just ridiculous Batman villains being ridiculous. I mean,
yeah,
some of these villains that they've, like, brought in and, like, built out are just kind of crazy, you know, like, just 60s throwing spaghetti against the wall kind of idea of villains,
totally,
right?
Totally, totally.
Clayface. Like, just in general, the name, yeah, the character, it's wild. And they've built...
It's a very goofy concept.
Totally. Totally. And I think that's the brilliance of shows like Harley Quinn and Kite Man, is they're exploiting that because it is funny. It's not supposed to be scary or dark, which, right, I feel like they've done brilliantly with characters like, you know, the Riddler or the Joker, right? Yeah. In, like, the movies, right? The live action. They've done a brilliant job. Maybe even the Penguin, right? A very,
for sure,
goofy 60s character who they made into a killer mobster, right?
Yeah.
But, yeah, for characters kind of in this realm, there should be room for them to be silly goofy, because there is a lot of that in the comics, and I think fans enjoy that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, another good example is the Lego Batman movie, where, yeah, the beginning, when Joker's listing off all those villains, and he's like, probably worth the Google, like,
Condiment King.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's just kind of those, like, bizarre, like, these were really villains that they had, but, and they kind of lean into that. But yeah, you're right. I mean, it's a huge draw for the show is serious, typically serious Batman characters being goofy with some of the lesser known bizarre characters in that world. Do you think that they'll kind of more focus on the relationship stuff in this season and just kind of keep Kite Man as the, like, that's where we do the goofy stuff?
I would hope not.
Yeah.
It seems hopeful in this episode that they have, I mean, for one, just straight up bringing Clayface back seems like a very maybe positive sign that, like, there will be absurdity that we can look forward to. And I feel like the Brainiac story, like, this whole buildup will lead to, like, a more serious, bigger bad that isn't just going to end with them being like, oh, we, like, you know, almost broke up, but now we're, like, back stronger, right, than ever, right? Right. That shouldn't be the big bad, I feel like. The big bad should be an actual big bad, and I'm not trying to, like, minimize, you know, relational issues or anything like that, yeah, but, you know, just for the
son of a marriage therapist, you're like, they're fine.
Oh my gosh. No, I love that they've leaned into the absurdity, and I feel like there's room for that in the DC universe. I feel like a good example is the Scarecrow. In Christopher Nolan's trilogy, he's a very scary character.
Yeah, very serious.
And he's played brilliantly. Cillian Murphy, like, we love kind of that whole arc that he has, and, like, his plot to, like, take over, like, it's brilliant. And then in the Lego Batman movie and in the comics, he rides around in a crop duster, and it's just, yeah, like, it's a ridiculous premise.
Totally.
So I love that there's room for it to be serious and scary and dark, because DC does that very well. But I feel like we should be calling out the absurdity. We should be, like, making room for it to be kind of silly, goofy, fun superheroes, right?
Totally. I think that was a big critique of the Zack Snyder films, right, that he did, was they're too serious, they're too dark, when in contrast, the MCU was kind of making movies that everyone could enjoy, in a sense, like, they're all very lighthearted.
Right.
With a couple of exceptions, or I guess with a couple of, like, scene exceptions, like, for the most part, those movies are very lighthearted and everyone can enjoy them. But yeah, you're right. I mean, kind of going more into the fun side wouldn't be the worst thing. It could be a nice branch for DC to invest in,
right? Or even just have a facet of their cinematic universe, right, that can just focus on that.
Yeah, some of that what came out very shortly after we recorded the last episode, but the Hollywood Reporter says that Supergirl is confirmed to be in the Superman movie. And we kind of discussed this a bit last time, but now that it's confirmed, I really think that it will be like a post-credit scene, because they already have quite a few new characters they're introducing.
Right.
And if Supergirl's getting her own movie, I feel like you don't need to spend a good chunk of the movie setting her up. Like, it would be totally okay if she just wasn't a post-credits scene.
No, that's an incredible point. Yeah, I feel like it would be maybe akin to the Captain Marvel mention at the end of Infinity War, I believe.
Oh, yeah.
Where, like, there would have been like no word of her, right? And then at like the very end post credit scene, it's Nick Fury like sending out a signal, just like things are going terribly wrong, and then right. he turns to dust. I feel like it could be something around that realm where right, it's just a minor mention. We're aware vaguely of who she is, but we know that there's gonna be a movie coming out. Like it's build up, but yeah, you're right. There doesn't need to be any story, any back, anything concerning her, just because it's coming.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point.
There has been discussion about who might be playing the next Batman. A lot of people are thinking it might be Jensen Ackles, just because, right. you know, he was voicing him in Creature Commandos, and he's talked expressly about,
or in,
you know...
like the Tomorrowverse stuff.
Right, yeah, right. Yeah. Oh my gosh, he didn't even speak in Creature Commandos.
You're good. I know what you meant.
But yeah, like he has mentioned he would love to play Batman, and a lot of fans are excited to like have him around. I mean, he had kind of that crazy, big heroic-ish role as Soldier Boy in The Boys,
dude. Yeah.
Which I don't know, maybe heroic is the wrong word, but right, kind of just that like Captain America-esque, right.
Yeah.
He's got the build for it. It works well. Though there was some speculation that with the kind of the silhouette that we got of Batman, you know, the canonical
right.
in Creature Commandos, like he's big. He's buff. He's That's kind of the, like the animated, you know, Batman and Superman that we've gotten in these previous years. So a lot of people were saying it could be Alan Ritchson.
The Jack Reacher guy.
Right.
Yeah.
Who, you know, played it pretty well. Like
that would be pretty sweet. He's got the build for it.
He's got the build alone. And I mean, I watched the Reacher show. I enjoyed it quite a bit. And he could play like a pretty convincing, just big, scary. I mean, I feel like he'd be the kind of Batman that like convincingly would be able to haul the Joker over the interrogation table and pin him up against the wall.
Totally, totally.
Not that Christian Bale couldn't, but it's believable, right? Like,
no, I mean, his physique is awesome. He was in a movie called, I believe, The League of Ungentlemanly Warfare.
Yeah.
And he stars with Henry Cavill in it, and he's fun in that. Like, he cracks jokes. He's pretty sweet. He's got like a bow and arrow thing going on in that movie, and he's cool. Like, I like him.
He works well as an action character, which I mean,
yeah.
might be the idea that it's exciting around Batman, right? But I think that will be one of the bigger reveals. There's been, you know, words about where Jason Momoa is going to fit in the new universe, and it seems like James Gunn knows what he's doing, leaking small things about who's going to go where. Because there's a lot of, like, confusion and maybe hype around, like, where things are going. People are so curious.
Yeah, I wonder if they'll hold off, like, announcing stuff like that until after the Superman movie. Kind of let people build hype around that. And then afterwards be like, oh, and then now that this is, like, crazy popular, now we can show you what we got in store.
That would be brilliant marketing wise, right?
So yeah, there's the new TV spot that they released for the Superman movie. I believe it premiered during an NFL game. It's only 30 seconds, but we got a couple shots of new footage. We got a aircraft landing in a frozen land and Lex Luthor walking out of it. We got shots of what I would assume is the Fortress of Solitude, like, emerging. And then we got the big one is Superman flying. We got Superman hovering in the air with Lois.
We got a better look. I don't recall if we got as good of a look at, like, this crazy monster. I'm curious what that is or where that came from. And then also him fighting somebody on a football field. Still unknown.
I think that's still unknown. We can't figure that one out, but yeah, cool stuff. I mean, I think the biggest thing, Paul, is kind of talked about it, but the robot that Superman's pretty sad about might be, and it looks like he's in the Fortress of Solitude.
Right.
Might be like a robot that's supposed to be Jor-El or something, like talking to him, right? But with Lex Luthor appearing to land in this frozen area, kind of looks like the Fortress of Solitude, where it could be possibly that land. So I'm thinking he pulls up, figures out where he lives, and is like, I'm gonna mess it up, beats the crap out of him, I don't know how, which is how he ends up injured at the beginning of both trailers, where Crypto has to save him. But I think that him arriving was like Lex, like straight up, like right before events of where he's sad over the robot and he gets beat up.
That would make sense that he would be like the cause of that. I might be thinking too chronologically, but seeing that back to back in the trailer where it's like him down in the snow and then Lex stepping off the ship, I'm just like, oh, Lex caused that in some way and is just like, you know, flew over to like find him in his like broken state, is like coming to get him, right? Oh,
that's an interesting idea. Kind of like he sent someone to go beat him up and they did.
Right.
And he's like, I'm coming to pick up the remains.
Right. Or there was like some sort of brawl at the Fortress of Solitude. Superman like staggered off and like fell far away and Lex just flew over to be like, all right, let's finish this.
That's a good point. I didn't think about that.
Fun to get another look at Nicholas Holt as Lex Luthor. I'm very excited to see his portrayal.
Totally. He looked pretty cool. Okay, there's been stuff online. There's some people that believe that the wide lens on Superman flying looks a little off. Do you have any thoughts about that?
Oh, interesting. Nothing jumped out at me when I was watching that, but I guess I could see where they're coming from. And maybe that's just in relation to kind of the shots that we got in Man of Steel. It felt a bit more iconic, maybe truer to the feel that we got in like the flying that we got in like the original movies.
Yeah.
But do you agree with those?
Wide lenses on close-ups are not 100% my thing, but I personally didn't find a problem with it. I was kind of like, whatever. It's how James Gunn shot Adam Warlock in Guardians 3 when he was flying. And that one was a lot more close-up, though, if I remember. But very this much. Superman one looked a bit more natural. I think it's a fun new way to do it. And you're right. I think people might just be upset based on like how Man of Steel did it. And it all comes down to style, right? But James Gunn did say that like that is David Corn Sweat. It's like that is him acting like, and that is a real plate of an actual place. Like that isn't CGI. The only CGI would obviously be like putting David Corn Sweat into that plate.
Oh wow.
But like that background, like the environment, but that was
very
real,
like drone footage, and then they just like superimposed him on. That's incredible. Fun.
That's like totally like old school filmmaking.
Yeah, that feels much more practical than just CGing it all.
Yeah, but that was kind of a fun, like, oh yeah, man, they did that. That's neat.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Yet another one of those little like James Gunn flares where like he's just trying to make it a bit more practical.
Yeah. Yeah, he's great because he's always been good at, I think we've discussed this, but kind of just using the tools as best you can, right? Like he's not anti-CGI or pro-CGI. It's like you use the tools when you need them.
Right, but get creative when you don't.
Yeah. But yeah, it's kind of a fun little bit more shots of it. Hopefully we get some more. It'll be a good time.
Totally. Looking forward to it. But thank you all for joining us for this overview of Harley Quinn episode 3 and a bit of a breakdown of where the DC universe is at right now and maybe some look at possible castings and new footage of the Superman. Look forward to seeing you guys next week.
See ya.